Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runners, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We're brought to you by UCAN. That's GenerationUCAN.com. Perform, work out, energize. By VeloFix.com, the world's coolest mobile bike shop. By Polar, winners are made of blood, sweat, and data. And by our Challenged Athletes Foundation, we just sent out 3,260 grants totaling $4.8 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. We've now raised over $112 million in our first 26 years. You can go to challengedathletes.org to help out. Check out any of our interviews on iTunes, on iHeart, or at Babbittville.com. And as always, endurance lives here. One of our favorite people on the planet is in Spain right now. He is a three-time national time trial champion. He's won a stage at the Giro. He's finished fourth at the road race and the TT at 2012 Olympics. He's pretty much done it all in cycling. His name is Taylor Finney. T, how you doing?
What's up, Bob? I don't know if I've done it all, but that was a beautiful introduction. And damn, you guys have raised a lot of money. That is something to be.
Isn't that cool? So fun. So much fun stuff happening. Yeah, it's every day just seeing our athletes, but watching the ESPY Awards and seeing this Kirsty Addis, who we helped fund to get to Mount Everest, and you know, just seeing our athletes win the Challenged Athletes of the Year things at the ESPYs. It's cool because you sort of start with them when they're really young, and then next thing you know, they're champions. Sort of like you, my man. I think we first met when you were at the Velodrome. It might have been your first time on the Velodrome with Roger Young, and you were 16 years old, I think. Talk a little bit about growing up. First of all, you've got mom and dad. Mom, 84 Olympic gold medalist. She's been in, I think she's in Hall of Fames for rowing, for pretty much everything. Dad is the cash register, probably the greatest criterium racer in the history of cycling, and a first guy to win a stage at Tour de France. Talk a little bit about growing up. Was cycling something that you were into early or not?
I was into mountain biking early. For sure. I remember my parents would host bike camps in Copper Mountain and in a couple different places throughout the year. And I would always get out there on my mountain bike and let everybody go on the road ride. And then made that transition around the ripe age of 15. Thought I'd give it a shot. Thought I'd see if I could follow up on what the parents, the platform that the parents had laid out.
But growing up, you were mainly, didn't you play more soccer than anything else?
Yeah, I was super, super passionate about soccer. And we actually moved to Italy when I was 12. And we lived there for 3 years. And during that time, my pubescent self realized that I wasn't going to be the next Ronaldo.
You come from the U.S. where transition. You were probably a really good soccer player. Then you go to Italy where maybe not so much.
Yeah, I was all right when I first got there as a 12-year-old. But as soon as you're 14, 15, and you maybe start to play a level up or an age up, I was starting to get pretty tall and a little less coordinated and a little less motivated to practice all the time. And so I chose a sport that requires almost no training at all. Professional cycling.
Almost no training at all. You just race 170 days a year.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
If only I knew.
Oh, I know. And my favorite was, I remember we were interviewing Roger Young after your session at the Velodrome, and I think you came close to breaking, the Velodrome records during your first time on the track. And we're interviewing Roger and saying, well, what do you think? He goes, well, you don't have to teach a cheetah to be a cheetah. This kid is just a natural. He's just, obviously, with Davis and Connie, he's got the genes, and he certainly has the ability. When did you realize you could be really, really good at this cycling gig?
Well, you know, I have been really fortunate in the sense that I have had a foundation laid out for me from a young age. I've obviously, with my parents being in the cycling community, in the cycling world, and then having connections to people like Roger Young to be able to go do these training camps, but basically have them be at the level, you know, at the level of the highest riders in the nation at that point of, I'm just talking of support and of right. foundation. And I mean, you know how crucial that is with athletics and with sport, and that's what you do. That's what you deal with, is you provide that support and provide that foundation for athletes. And so when I was younger, I mean, I was just playing video games and riding my bike when my coach told me to ride my bike. I mean, I started racing and it just became this whirlwind almost immediately. And I had a coach and I was training with one of the earliest power meters. And so everything was scheduled and I just had to kind of plug in to that and do the work. And I had the foundation and the support to be able to go to all these different events and just be supported. And then all I would have to do was worry about racing. So in that sense, I consider myself probably to be one of the most fortunate young athletes that I've ever encountered, because I didn't have to set up that foundation myself. My parents, you know how my mom is.
Oh yeah.
She makes things happen. She's a project woman. So this definitely became a family project. And I mean, I realize that now, looking back, like 14 years later.
14 years. It is so funny to think of it that way. But yeah, I mean, you won the junior world time trial in, what was that, August 2007. It seems like yesterday.
Yeah, 12 years ago.
I remember being in the wind tunnel here in San Diego with you and your dad doing, you know, when you were doing some testing there and just watching where it's come. You said it was a whirlwind. And I remember that 2008 year, it was all about, well, because you started fairly late, just trying to get to the Olympics, right? That was sort of the goal, is to try to get there. But you were so far behind the eight ball because you're starting so late. Did you love it early on, or did it seem like a job right away? Because you had to, it's like, okay, I got to get points and I got to get to the Olympics. And was there a love of the sport early on, or is it just, you know what, I'm good at this, let's keep going?
I mean, listen, I had just turned 17. I was an okay student, but I had too much energy to sit in a classroom for 6 or 7 hours a day. And I was going into my senior year of high school, and my parents and also USA Cycling was telling me, hey, you could possibly go to the Olympics if you wanted to. So what 17-year-old athlete walking down the halls of his high school is not going to be like, all right, that's what I want to do for sure. Like, get me out of this school.
I can travel the world.
Get me into the Olympics. I mean, the traveling that year was pretty wild. I went to Australia and then China, and then did a couple trips, like went to Denmark and then came back, and then went to the UK and then came back, and then flew to South Africa and flew to France from South Africa, and then flew to China from France to go to the Olympics finally.
Oh my God. And what was that Olympic experience like? You know, there's a lot of, all of a sudden there's what, gymnasts and all sorts of fun distractions.
Yeah, I mean, I was mentally, I was totally blown out from all of that travel.
And sure.
The effort was, listen, I just turned 18 at this point. Like, I'm not even an adult yet, or barely. And it's hard to think back actually to that time and recall exactly how it was without slipping into the narrative that you're used to kind of telling people. But I do remember getting there and feeling like I had made it just being at the Olympics. I went and I did everything. I stayed in the Olympic Village for 3 weeks. The entire time I went to the opening ceremonies, the closing ceremonies. I was super distracted. They have an arcade in the Olympic Village, like as if you need any more distractions than like all of the crazy animal athletes that are walking around you.
Right.
I mean, they got a McDonald's in the village.
You can eat as much as you want. Everything's free.
Yeah, you can eat whatever you want. Like, there's so many varying levels of athletes around you, from Ronaldinho to just whoever you're rooming with.
Right.
And whatever they're going through, whatever their stress is, it kind of becomes your stress. I mean, now I have this whole meditation practice, this mindfulness practice, basically this way to tap into my sympathetic nervous system and surrender and calm and just let go. But at that time, I had traveled like 120,000 miles to get there within the course of 9 months. So once I got there, I was like, all right, this is it. Like, I've made it. I'm going to soak up this experience.
Absolutely.
And the racing didn't go as well as I wanted it to, but, you know.
So what? the prize was getting to the Olympics. Marching in the opening ceremonies, marching in the closing ceremony. A lot of people go to their first Olympics because you don't know if you'll ever get back. You want to enjoy every second of it. And the second time you go, it's, okay, now it's business. Now I'm here to medal, right? There was a huge difference between the first time you went and the second time you went.
Well, for sure. The second time that I went, I was racing for a professional cycling team. So they only allowed me about 4 days to go there. And then I had to fly out the next day immediately after the time trial and go race this long race in the Netherlands, and which also goes into Belgium. It used to be called the Eneco Tour. So I was at that point, I was really, really happy that I took the full 3 week experience in as an 18-year-old. Because I recognize that as a professional now, I'll never have that opportunity again.
So when you look at everything you've done, all the different races you've been in, what do you look at as your best day on the bike?
And honestly, my best day on the bike was like yesterday or 2 days ago. You know, either I struggle with my memory or I'm living a little too present, but I feel like I'm always rediscovering,
yep,
rediscovering the bicycle, and I'm always rediscovering the different ways that you can use the bicycle. You know, you can ride your road bike, you can ride your time trial bike, you can ride your gravel bike. Right now I'm riding my mountain bike a lot and really reconnecting with that initial love of fully being immersed into nature with this machine that you use to just absolutely barrel over everything.
Right.
And, you know, you're crashing, you're jumping, but you're just in touch with the earth. You're not quite as in touch with the earth as if you were barefoot running, but you are, you know, you're just in there. And I spent so much time on the roads and in traffic and,
yep,
with a lot of people around that I'm really seeking a lot of solace right now in nature and doing a lot of adventures as well. Like, we get in trains here and we'll take the train with our bikes north or south and just go on an adventure, like somewhere that we've never been before. I love that so much.
I remember years ago when we were doing an interview, and at that point, you'd been racing, and you had decided, you know what, I'm just going to take the bike, take my credit card, go up to, I think it was Oregon or Washington, and just ride. I have no idea where I'm going, when I'm stopping, just, you know, because you'd been doing so much racing and so much specific training to just be on the bike, you felt like all of a sudden you had discovered why people love riding their bikes.
Yeah, well, like I said, you know, to perfectly kind of tie it back into the beginning of our conversation is I had a foundation that was set up for me right when I started racing, and I have been training with a power meter since I was 16.
Yeah.
And so I never got to just get on the bike and then feel my body and sort of decide what I wanted to do with it. It was always prescribed, whatever I was doing, whatever rides I was doing. And that's how I grew up. And that's how a lot of kids actually grow up now, a lot of kids that are turning professional. So this idea, I was in Vancouver. Your memory is awesome. I was in Vancouver and I rode down to Eugene, Oregon, just over a couple of days. I mean, it's incredibly easy just to take minimal things in the summer and
yep.
go from place to place and experiencing it. I think it never really made sense to me when I would go on a big ride that I would go do 6 hours of cycling and I would start and finish in the same place. It just always felt a little weird.
Yeah.
Like I just did this huge thing and now I'm back where I started. So I loved that idea of kind of trying to pick a place and also allowing the road and the path to unfold in front of you and not exert so much control over it.
So you mentioned the other day your neighbor is Jan Frodeno, 2-time Ironman world champion and gold medalist. Do you guys get out and ride at all?
You know, he told me that he rides primarily inside because he's afraid of the traffic. I mean,
yep.
they have two kids.
Yeah.
And, you know, talk about prescribed training. I think that their training is super, super prescribed. We had breakfast actually a couple of months ago. I see him every once in a while. But, I mostly ride with my friend David here in town, who I also make. We also have an art project together. And I've been riding with this professional mountain biker, Sam Gaze, who just destroys me on the mountain bike, which makes me feel really good.
Didn't you just do the Dirty Kanza? Dirty Kanza?
The Dirty Kanza.
How fun was that? What would you have, yeah. 9 flats?
Well, once I got my third flat, I was riding with this kid, TJ Eisenhardt, who is the closest thing that I have to a little brother on the planet Earth.
Yeah.
And also sometimes he does things and says things that just, I'm like, are we the same person? And he's kind of one of those like
yep.
intense reflections and mirrors. And he's an amazing, amazing, free-spirited, positive, loving soul. And he was wildly unprepared for the Dirty Kanza. And so we kind of teamed up. I was the one getting most of the flats in the beginning, and then he got more of the flats towards the end. But I think I got 5 and he got 4, so he wins.
Are you surprised at the growth of gravel racing and gravel riding?
Man, not at all. You know, I've been riding on dirt roads for a long time and always on skinny tires. And like I said, like TJ, wildly unprepared most of the time. But it's so nice to get off of the road, and it's so nice to not feel this pressure of a car coming up behind you. And even if they are on a dirt road, there's just something a little bit different about the ethos of how those roads are operated on by somebody who's in a car and somebody who's on a bike. So I totally understand the scene. Going to Dirty Kanza, I was like, why have I not been doing this for a long time? Like,
yeah,
this thing. The fatter the tires that I can find, the better. It's just something about them that just make me feel happy. And then when you go out and ride, it's like everything's squishy and you're not getting jolted by potholes and you're not even hitting potholes because you're freaking dirt road or a path. I mean, I take my gravel bike way beyond its limits, and I always am just doing mountain bike trails, and that's why I've now just graduated to the mountain bike.
Hey, talk about the EF Education First team. What are you doing with those guys?
Yeah, man. I mean, EF Education First Pro Cycling is the coolest team, the coolest professional cycling team that exists right now and possibly has ever existed. And I'm not just saying that because I'm on the team. Obviously that helps and bias. But EF is a company, Education First. They have almost 50,000 employees worldwide. They have 106 they have offices in 106 countries. They are all over the place, and they provide learning through experience. They provide experiential learning with a focus, I would say, on language. So the team, we're kind of, in my eyes, we're kind of like this real marketing device for EF to get their logo out. That people can see it. I've done some school visits for them. We're always connected with them in some shape or form. Like at Tour de France, they will be bringing people that work for EF to the bus every day that are from all over the world just to keep the stoke alive within the company. We're like a guerrilla marketing team. We're also a stoke. And we get people who work for EF excited about working for EF because EF is badass.
Yeah.
And we also get that name. I had no idea what EF Education First was when they first took over the team. This would have been just shy of 2 years ago. But once I was into that envelope and I saw their logo and I started learning about them, I can't go to an airport now without seeing EF everywhere. They're like the most pervasive company that you've never heard of until you hear of them, and then they're everywhere.
I've never heard of them.
Working with them.
Yeah.
I love the energy that they bring to the races. Team hashtag is explore the world. And personally, as an explorer, as somebody who is just curious about as many things as possible, I love that that is our team ethos, and that our team ethos is not about challenging or being better, or, you know, we're not trying to create contrast with trying to explore.
And you're the chief vibrations officer.
Yeah, self-coined.
Love that.
Self-coined, but I'm just keeping the vibes flowing over here. I actually just set up my music studio downstairs in my garage, and so I was getting some vibrations going down here.
So you've got the music going. You've got your artwork, which is spectacular. You're doing meditation and yoga. Is it hard for you? Yeah, I'm sorry.
I'm a freak.
No, not at all. You're a well-rounded individual, which is a little different from a lot of folks who are professional athletes. Is it hard for you not to be at the tour this year after doing it the last couple of years?
Man, honestly, no.
Yeah.
I loved my experience that I had at the Tour de France the first time. I loved the experience that I had last year.
Uh-huh.
I broke 7 bones in my face with 3 days to go, but I still made it. And that's just the France. It's like you don't know what you're in for when you go, when you go there. I mean, you saw today, TJ crashed on his face and
yeah.
did a whole 230K with just blood on his face. And so honestly, I'm very happy to be here. I miss that energy a little bit for sure, but and I think that I'm there might be a part of me that misses the challenge, but I've been looking for the challenge in different things. Like I have done a couple meditations in the rain and gotten really cold and tried to use some Wim Hof breathing exercises uh-huh. to stabilize my body temperature. So I'm just really curious. I think I feel like I got the Tour de France. Like that's something that I can say that I did and I was deeply involved in. And I'm kind of like, all right, like let's keep exploring some new frontiers. That's where my head is at right now.
So what will the rest of this season be for you?
It's a little bit up for grabs. I mean, everybody's pretty focused on the Tour de France right now, and all of the decision makers are there, and they're at least the people in the management of my team who create the schedule and the calendar, they're there. I'm hoping to do Leadville, this 100-mile mountain race in Colorado in August.
Sweet.
And yeah, I would like to go to Japan as well in October. There's a race in Japan, just one day. But the scene and the energy from the fans there is a new, different kind of an energy than we're used to. And I really appreciate going there and being able to experience that place because I love Japan.
So back in 2014, your national road championships, and you have a horrific crash, a motorcycle on the course, 60-mile-an-hour crash, fracture your leg. And you can say the two words fractured leg, but it was way worse than that. Talk a little about just what you were dealing with then and how you came back from that. How did it change you?
Oh, man. It completely changed the direction and the course and the path. And if you imagine that I was riding on some sort of a road, it just pushed me into the ocean, and then I had to learn how to swim.
Wow.
But to continue with that metaphor, I think I'm a water person. Like it was the rehabilitation process was so humbling, and it allowed me to take a step from this hyper ego driven mentality that I had always attempted to embody as an athlete, but I couldn't quite get my head around. This idea that you have to, that nothing can stand in your way, that you have to just like take no prisoners and just like barrel through everyone and get to that top step podium. And it's all about me and me and me. And me. I feel like I was on this path almost to set myself up to be one of those people. I was, at the time of the crash, I was experiencing this shift. I had just won a stage in Tour of California. I just won the national championship time trial. And I was experiencing a shift where I was finding it easier to eat less and easier to train more and easier to just be kind of more aggressive. And this more this idea of an athlete, of a man that I thought I needed to be. And then boom, shattered. Like overnight. I mean, I won the national championship time trial, and then it was the next day. The road race was the next day, and I was, you know, spent the next couple of weeks in the hospital. And it was super intense, but my mom was there, and my parents all came out. I ended up being flown to Park City. Like I said, I have to be the most fortunate person. I have a foundation of people and my family, and they, you know, I ended up in Park City, and it was beautiful, and I was with my parents, and we were just hanging out, and my leg was disappearing, you know, atrophying super fast, and I thought I was going to be back racing in, like, 6 months. It took 16 months.
Yeah.
But while I was away, I discovered meditation, I discovered painting, I discovered a love and an ear for music, a curiosity for music that I've always had, but I just never thought that I could do anything about it, because I just assumed that if you were talented at something, that's all that mattered, and you pick up a guitar, you sit down at the piano and you just play it, and if you don't have that talent, you just can't do it. But I really recognized, I think, through this process that you can start from zero, because I had to start from zero with my leg, broken leg, and you can build that thing back up to world class. I mean, when I came back from the injury, we won the team time trial at the World Championships with BMC Racing, like a couple months after I came back.
Yeah.
And so, it just totally opened my eyes, and it ripped away a lot of preconceived ideas that I had held in my mind that came from somewhere. I can't tell you where. And it's kept my eyes open. Like, I understand that I perspective is continuously unfolding and will never stop. And if it does stop, there's something wrong.
What's fascinating to me is I've obviously done a lot of interviews with our Challenge Athlete Foundation athletes over the years. And what you're saying sounds so familiar, because you have an amputee athlete or a wheelchair-bound athlete will say, listen, I don't want to go through that again, but what I went through made me the person I am today. It changed me in a lot of positive ways. And if you ask me if I want to go back to where I was before, I would say no. And I always found that, wait a second, you're in a wheelchair now, you weren't before, but you feel your life is better. And invariably, the answer is yes.
You know, it's all about perspective, and there are certain things that seem to me, and I'm not a religious person, I'm a deeply spiritual person, but there seems to me to be these events and these accidents that happen in people's lives and put them onto the trajectory that they were kind of meant to be on, or it's just opened up your perspective to a point to where you go, okay, actually, yeah, life makes more sense now, even though this was like a severely traumatic thing that happened to me. It's just interesting to say that. I mean, again, very fortunate to be able to use this egg. Like,
one of our favorite people on the planet, Mr. Cam Wurf, you did a film with him, the Thereabouts 2, where you guys basically rode from Moab to. Rode from Boulder to Moab, And Cam came over to our world, came into triathlon from cycling before that, rowing. What a special kid he is. Did you know him very well before you guys did the Thereabouts together?
You know, just a bit. He raced for this team called Liquigas, this Italian team, which actually was sponsored by Cannondale, and so that merged with the current team that I'm on. So he was on a version of me just a couple prior, and I would speak to him every once in a while, but we didn't really get to talk much. I got to know him in Thereabouts, and he added a really perfect balance at that time.
Yeah.
To our group dynamic, because you had these kind of like three sort of lost souls with Gus and Lachlan Morton and myself, sort of all searching with people who are searching. And then Cam comes in with, you know, he's like RoboCop.
Yeah.
He would just get on the front and just pump it out, you know? So he added a perfect balance to that trip, to that experience, and to that filmmaking process. And we've stayed in touch since then, you know, anytime I'm in touch. I usually see him like once a year.
You might need to come to Kona and watch him win Ironman this year.
Man, that would be rad. I would love it if he won Ironman in Kona.
He's you know, we've seen it before. We're like a Steve Larson, who was a pro cyclist, and they come over, and you know, the run obviously is very difficult, and he keeps getting faster and faster and faster. He's I think he did 8 full Ironmans last year, which is crazy, because he feels like he needs to learn the sport.
Dude,
yeah, I know.
That is,
yeah, 8 fulls. Yeah, that's 8 marathons. Who the hell does? No pro marathoner does 8 marathons basically in a lifetime, and he's doing them in 1 year. So, but he feels that he's, you know, that's how you get better. So Taylor, for this, any racing for the rest of the year that you have to do, or are you good?
Yeah. I mean, I'm racing in London. I'm racing in Leadville, hopefully. And,
Oh, you're going to do Leadville 100.
Yeah.
Sweet. We'll have a big CAF group out there. Yeah.
It's not official, and I'm trying to make that and weasel my way in there, but it's a goal of mine. I would really love to do it.
Well, if you want to do it as part of our CAF team, I think we could probably get you in.
Yeah, that's a nice alternative option. Alternative options.
Love it. And mom and dad, everybody's good?
Yeah, they're both in the mountains. My dad just turned 60.
Yep.
Two days ago.
I actually have a 7-Eleven jersey that was Davis's that I got at like an auction or something. I don't know where I got it, but it's got DP inside. Oh, yeah. That cool?
Nice, man.
Hey, T, thanks so much for taking so much time. It's always so cool to catch up with you and see everything you're doing. I love the fact that meditation and yoga. Now, when you're doing yoga in the airport and you just decide to do a little downward dog right there, you get some looks?
I mean, probably, but the nice thing about the downward dog is that I can't really see.
You can't see what they're looking at. That's exactly. That's great. But
the yoga is a lifesaver, man. Just having an injury that I'm still dealing with 5 years later that I'll be dealing with for the rest of my life, having something that is my practice that can restore balance to my body, and not having to continuously search for therapists and you know, other people to take on the burden of restoring this balance to my body, to have, that's where the yoga, you know, the yoga, but the yoga comes from just recognizing that as I get older, I'm going to have to do something to keep all my, I'm a big person.
Yes, you are.
You know?
Yes, you are.
I got to stay stretched out, otherwise I'm just going to crumble.
Coming back from this injury, has it been harder than what you dealt with in 2014?
Which injury?
The when you're talking about the facial injuries.
Oh, that was definitely not harder. But I'm talking about the 2014 leg incident.
That's forever.
That's something where else, it's pretty much forever. So, I mean, if I want to keep using my body in the way that I want to keep using my body, I have to restore balance to it. I think we all get, from what I understand, I'm only 29, but from what I understand, we all get to a point in our lives where we want to be doing things, but maybe our body is not letting us do those things.
Welcome my world.
Exactly the way that we want to. And I just figured, like, man, I'm going to start early in, my eyes, and just, like, develop a language with my body in order to say, like, okay, I want to be 75 and I want to say that I broke my leg like 50 years ago and I'm still going out and I'm shredding on the mountain bike.
Yeah,
that's my dream.
And early on, I mean, you lost what, like 25% power on the one side?
Oh man, it was a lot. I lost eight centimeters of circumference.
Eight? Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's huge.
Yeah, it was. She was tiny. I'll just call her she for now.
What, how long did it take to get the circumference still off, or is it close?
Yeah, it's still a little bit smaller. It's my skinny jean leg, but.
Your skinny jean leg. Great.
I don't really wear skinny jeans anymore, though, so it defeats the purpose.
T, thank you as always for taking time. I appreciate it. And always a pleasure to catch up. You're the best.
Thank you for just putting those good vibes out into the universe and connecting people and keeping people grounded, humble, supported, and fighting a good fight, dude. You're leaving a legacy behind you that is rad and inspiring for somebody like me, so I appreciate you.
It was always great when you were both of our endurance awards. You always brought down the house, and give my best to mom and dad.
Yeah, will do, man.
All right, Taylor Finney has been our guest. Again, we are brought to you by You Can. That's generationyoucan.com. Perform, workout, energize. By VeloFix.com, the world's coolest mobile bike shop. By Polar. Winners are made of blood, sweat, and data. By our Challenged Athletes Foundation, we sent out 3,260 grants totaling $4.8 million. Keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. Help out, go to challengedathletes.org and check out interviews on iHeart.com, iTunes.com, or at Bavaville.com. And as always, endurance lives here.